Welcome to Quartercast, everybody. I'm here with Sarah Michaels, aka Sarah FM. How are you?
I'm fine, thank you. How are you?
Doing good.
Seasonal allergies and making me a little snarfy.
Yeah. Well, your voice sounds okay. I know you're worried about that. Hopefully you feel all right.
Yeah.
But if you need any breaks, let me know to clear everything out.
Will do.
But yeah, I really appreciate you having me over, and it's a nice day. We're enjoying it, and I wanted to talk to you about your long career in music. So I guess let's just take it from the beginning. So when did you start getting into music? Like, how did it all start for you?
I think it probably started with my taping. I had one of those old Radio Shack tape cassette recorders with a little handle on it, and I would record freestyle songs off the radio and make mixes from Power 99.
Nice.
And then I had a punk rock aunt who gave me a ton of her record collection, so all of a sudden I had all this, like, Patti Smith and,
oh, nice,
you know, anything that was at CB's I had in my record collection. So I really wanted to play guitar, but my parents weren't so into that. So my uncle gave me, like, a really crappy acoustic guitar with really high action. I didn't know how to tune it. And I would just play along to, like, Pissing in the River, whatever, Radio Ethiopia. I could, like, play the whole record in, like, my weirdly open-tuned, impossible-to-play guitar.
I feel like that's a rite of passage, yeah. The very high action guitar.
Totally.
And did you say you grew up in Delaware? Is that where we're talking about?
I grew up, like, right on the little corner of where Maryland, Delaware, and Pennsylvania all meet, on the Pennsylvania side.
Gotcha.
I was born in Delaware, but then my family moved to Pennsylvania.
Okay.
Yeah.
So at that time, like, you got this cool record collection with Patti Smith. Was there stuff on the radio you were into?
Yeah, I just really listen to tons of, I loved freestyle. Like, I would just really just all day, every day, be making those recordings of freestyle tapes. My mom's got, like, a whole basket of weird mixtapes that I made just off the radio, of freestyle stuff, you know, like Stevie V and whatnot.
Mm-hmm.
And my parents listened to a lot of Motown and, The Carpenters. Like, they had really kind of eclectic music taste themselves, but no offense, parents, but, like, a little square-ish, but...
I mean, if you didn't think your parents' music was lame, then you're kind of the lame one, right?
Totally. I mean, how many times can you listen to James Taylor before you just, like, break the record in half?
Yeah.
But my mom was really also into gospel music. She listens to a lot of gospel music, so that was just always on, and I really think that a lot of that music just influences me generally. So, but when my aunt introduced all that punk rock music, it was just kind of like, I don't know, I had access to all this different cool stuff, and metal was kind of happening at that moment too. So,
is that something you'd gotten into, or not as much?
Yeah, not as much. I definitely was more into, like, very small run, like, 7 inches. I had this friend Gavin who was a senior when I was a freshman in high school, and he had always just a milk crate in his back of his car with 7 inches of, like, bands that nobody ever heard of. And I remember, like, following some of those bands, and they're, you know, playing at, like, house shows. Or my grandmother lived in Cambridge, Massachusetts, and I went and saw this band Heroin, like, in the basement of a church, because got the 7-inch out of Gavin's car, and that stuff really influenced me a lot, too, because it was just so cool to, like, play wherever you want, play whatever you want, just, I don't know, just make a lot of loud noises, and I always thought those were, like, big, cool bands. I didn't know there was, like, a run of, like, 57 inches that they printed, and that's it.
Yeah. So, well, hang on. Let me, I have a couple things I want to ask you, but first off, so when I was listening to your EP, Fade Away, it came out this year, right?
Put it out last month, yeah. April. Yep.
I noticed there's a lot of, like, grooves to it, and you're talking about listening to Motown, you're talking about Patti Smith, and I kind of feel like, I kind of feel like maybe that might have influenced you, like, rhythmically or, like, in terms of a groove, or...
Yeah, for sure. I definitely, like, I love anything that's in 6/8.
Yeah.
And I also love anything that's a waltz, which I don't know if that's, like, a Burt Bacharach thing, but, yeah, anything that's kind of groovy or behind the beat or has a little backbeat to it, I just like that kind of stuff. Okay. And I've played in a lot of bands where we've done just, like, straight... four on the floor, rock and roll music, but yeah, I always wanted to be get a little funkier, and I, you know, now I'm really I don't have an editor, it's just me, so there's nobody to tell me that I'm doing something the wrong way or any collaborative element to where somebody wants to do something a little differently, so anything that I hear in my head is what I'm going to end up playing. Mm-hmm. And it's getting on the record because there's nobody to edit me.
Yeah. No one to throw drumsticks at you or whatever else.
Totally. Yeah, be like, no. Their count is off. You're doing it all wrong or whatever it is.
Well, let's take a little listen. Let's listen to that first track, Fake Town. We'll take a little break and then we'll get back into the conversation. Here cool. is Fake Town. We'll be right back. So that was Fake Town. I really like the guitar lick you have on there and all of that. So tell me about, like, the creation of that song. Did you have a piece that came to you first and then you built around it, or?
Yeah, I kind of did that little guitar riff that repeats a zillion times in the front end of it. I had just played that. I had been hearing it in my head, and I played it. I wanted it to kind of sound like a spaghetti western kind of thing.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
And I wanted to make it real open and kind of make space for just that riff to kind of live in this beginning of the song. And I had originally written an entirely different second and third section. And a friend of mine who is actually the one of the very small handful of people that I call on when I find myself needing an editor, listened to the original version of it that I made, and she was like, "Why am I listening to this? The end of the song is terrible."
Oh no!
So I ended up cutting it. I mean,
brutal honesty.
Yeah, no, I appreciate her for her brutal honesty. She's always most brutally honest. Alsada, the Nubatones, the best. Awesome. But at any rate, she edited the second half of that song just off. So I decided to rewrite it, and she just, I don't know, was feeling like the piece that I wrote in subsequent to the beginning, Noodly Lick, was too, like, middle of the road. It didn't take you really anywhere. So with her insights, I chopped off that back half of the song, and then I wrote the new back half of the song, and I didn't show it to her until I released the record, but now she loves the song. but yeah, I went somewhere or totally different than, you know, I just made it more like, I don't know, kind of like, how do you feel like when you're depressed and nobody cares and somebody finds out?
Hey. yeah, it's like very kind of listless and that whole thing.
Yeah, it's just like, but straighten up your tie and shut up and walk around like an automaton and just be fine and don't act like anything's wrong ever, because then everybody will leave.
Yeah. And so then lyrically, that's kind of what was in your head when you were writing the lyrics.
Yeah, originally I don't think that was necessarily, well, because I did have the spaghetti western kind of idea, I was thinking about like loneliness and solitude maybe, but then yeah, I was just listening to her saying like, yeah, I need this the song to take me somewhere else. Yeah. I was like, okay, so we're gonna go somewhere else.
Take you to Fake Town
where you're like just playing your role.
Yeah. Oh, man. And so was there, like, a specific event going on that kind of drove you to write that song? Was that something specific from your life or just, like...
I think it's just, like, a general feeling of, yeah, like, sorrow. Mm-hmm. Deep, inexplicable sorrow.
Yeah. I mean, we've all been there, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
And so in terms of the rest of the EP, did you have, like, a theme you were looking at when you were writing these songs?
The first record, the full-length record I put out before this was it was kind of like a bunch of kind of like nihilist anthems of like, you know, what's the point sort of thing. So I sort of want to carry on with that theme because what's the point? And, you know, I wanted it to be a little bit more cohesive than my first project. My first project was really, I had no editing. I just went all over the place. I don't know if you listened to that record, but it's like one song's like a rock and roll song, and one song is just like a slow jam, and one song is like, I don't know. I feel like this record was more just based around the guitar, and I just really wanted to focus on my guitar playing. Mm-hmm. And a little less synthesizers.
Yeah. Was that Volition or something?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, I did give that a listen. Yeah, I didn't really think about it, but now that you say that, that does make sense. There was a little more...
It was kind of like every genre.
Yeah.
There was like a pop song, an R&B, like a neo-soul song, a rock and roll song. I just wouldn't feel like when I made that record, I was really deep in a synthesizer hole, and mm-hmm. I feel like I've sort of plucked myself out of the synthesizer hole a little bit and used them a little more tastefully on the new EP, because I just wanted to really focus on the guitars.
Well, yeah, synths are fun, but, you know, gotta switch it up, right?
Gotta switch it up, yeah.
And so, so getting back to kind of your history in music, so you were saying you've been in a lot of bands. When did you start your first band? Like, how old were you? Where was that?
I think I must have been, like, 13. I was in middle school in Pennsylvania with my friends Brian and Doug, who I'm still really good friends with.
Oh, that's great.
Yeah, we had this band called Brill, and it was, like, me singing, like, angry girl songs, like, mad girl songs with my loud guitars, and I couldn't play guitar, obviously, as well as I can now. But it was a pretty good band, and we actually made a record.
Oh,
well,
really?
We made a cassette.
Was your first band?
Yeah. Made a cassette tape, and it still sounds so good to me that we got to record with this. How did I meet all these people? I don't even remember, but I met this guy, Art DeFuria, who had a studio in Center City, Philadelphia called The Frizz, and my parents drove us up there, and they went to the Museum of Art, and my friends and I went and recorded this record with Art at the Frizz, and it was awesome because he was like the first person who was like pushing me to do different stuff with my vocals or make harmonies or anything like that. And I spent a lot of time with him. Like, I don't know. It's such a random and weird thing. How did we become friends? I can't remember the origin story of that, but I just remember I spent a lot of time at that studio.
Wow.
And I got to, you know, learn a lot about recording, and I was like a teenager, so I got to make records, and I recorded with him a handful of times with another band too.
What's the name of the first band you were talking about?
Brill.
Oh, Brill, you said.
Yeah.
Okay, sorry.
Yeah.
And then, so what were the other bands you recorded there?
Then I recorded with a band called Marmalade. And that band was like my band in high school. We played, we got to play a lot of really cool shows. We got to play, you know, there was like a Universalist Unitarian punk rock, the church where all the punk, I don't think
the
that's
kitty
where you
wants
go,
to
Piggy.
Be.
All the punk rock shows were, and so we got to play a lot there, but then we also got kind of like, I don't know how this happened either. Maybe it's 'cause I think that Art's roommate maybe was this guy Brian, who had a record label in Philadelphia, and then he ended up getting married to Kristen Thompson, who had Simple Machines record label in DC, and we were kind of like a weird oddity because we were so young, so we got to play a lot of shows with like Tsunami, and then when Riot Girl happened and all those bands would come to the East Coast and play in Philadelphia or surrounding areas, we'd get to play with those guys. We got to play with like Bikini Kill and Team Dresh and Third Sex and all those people.
Wow.
And simultaneously, because we had a girl fronting the band, we were able to play with all the Riot Girl people, but we didn't really make punk rock music. We made more poppy kind of rocky stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So we also got to play with like all the indie rock bands that were coming around too, like Swirlies and Tsunami and I don't know, whoever else. We played with everybody. We just were these little weirdos, and we got to be like on display. It's like, look, we brought also this cute little band.
Do you have like a favorite show you can remember from the whole stretch?
Yeah, there was a really deadly show that we played with Bikini Kill and Team Dresh in West Philadelphia in this house that was not stable at all.
God.
And I remember when Bikini Kill was playing, me and I feel like maybe Donna was down there. I don't remember. Some other band people were downstairs, and we were holding up a 6x6 in the middle of the floor because they were like, there was a pit, and it was, the floor was heaving and heaving,
oh,
and I was
Jesus.
Like, oh my God, we're all gonna die, the floor's gonna collapse, because it was not really safe. But it was so fun, it was super cool. We also played another show around that same time, like, on the roof at Drexel with Bikini Kill. We played a lot with Bikini Kill. We played,
That's
like,
awesome.
At Bryn Mawr with them, and Drexel, and, you know, whenever they would play a college show around that region, we were usually able to play with them, which was cool.
That's cool. Yeah, man, you don't want the floor to fall out, though.
No, you definitely don't. It was crazy. So many kids. I mean, it was so many people in there that it would have been super tragic. Yeah. And it also would have been, like, the end of Riot Girl. Because it was, like, every... I was at least Team Dresh and Bikini Kill. It would have been a mess. It was a mess.
Yeah, wow.
But it was a cool... It was a fun show. But I'm sure there are some other people that probably were there that will remember if holding up that 6x6 under the floor, under the, like... joist to hopefully not have the floor collapse on us.
That's so crazy.
It was very crazy.
And so then how did you end up in New York, like, doing music there?
When I was, like, maybe 12, also, like, again, I was, like, 12 or 13, and they always had these cool indie rock shows at the University of Delaware, and I went to one of these shows, and it was, like, Versus and Ruby Falls and all these great indie bands. And I became pen pals with the singer from Ruby Falls. And we just, like, wrote back and forth to each other. And every time they would come through on tour, like, they'd always stay at my parents' house. It was so cool. But anyway, I knew that I had... When I turned, I think must have been, like, 16 or something, I went up there and visited. And I got to stay at Cynthia's apartment on St. Mark's Place. It was so cool. It was just, like... all the coolest people. Like, I was, you know, a kid, but I was still, like, getting into all the bars. I didn't drink or anything then, but I was getting into all the bars, and I got to, like, be around all these cool musicians that were so awesome. Like, I don't know, just playing all this music that I love a lot and knew pretty well. And I was like, this is where I want to be. I want to be in New York. This is, like, I could do all this stuff in a band up here. And so... I left. And so I left and I went to New York.
And so how long were you there?
I was there for like 20 something years.
Oh, wow.
I moved there in 1990. I moved into my own apartment in 1996. And then I, this girl. And then I.
The cat is giving me some attention.
I know.
So the listener knows what's going on.
Yeah, the cat is super attentive. Aww. She's very picky. She might bite you. I can't vouch for her not biting you.
Well, be careful then.
She's a little frisky. I left there in 1996. And I must have gone there in 1995. Yeah, like 20 years. Yeah, 20 years. We got here in 2015.
Okay.
Yeah.
Wow. So what kind of music were you doing at that time? What kind of band were you in?
Like, oh, my God. When I first got to New York, I was in a band of, like, all-star, like, people from other bands of the level of Marmalade. So it was, like, again, I was coming from a place where...
The supergroup?
Yeah, I was buying the 7 inches of a tiny band that was probably as famous as my band, which was, like, put out 5 copies of their record, and I was like, this band is huge. So... other bands like that. No offense, you guys. I know you guys are all awesome. But we put together this ridiculous supergroup called The Rulers that was like a bunch of awesome people from awesome bands. And we got to play that first time Sleater-Kinney came to the East Coast. We played with them at 2 places. We played with them at Barnard and we played with them at... what's that college in Connecticut with the W that's like a women's college? Wesleyan.
Yeah.
Is it women's college? I don't know. Whatever. At any rate, we went.
It was at one point.
Right. So we played those couple shows with them. And that band was messy. It was really funny. We had songs like about Joey Lawrence and it was like kind of it was a silly band. We played a lot of silly songs and we got to play with those guys because they knew us from our other more serious bands. And then by the time they played their 3rd show, which was at a significantly bigger venue, we were supposed to be playing that show and they had kicked us off the bill.
Oh, no.
We all showed up with guests on it for a guest list and they were like, yeah, you guys don't have a guest list.
That's the way it goes. This is a tough business.
It's a tough business. What are you going to do? Yeah, we definitely missed some boats, but whatevs.
But that's cool to even be able to play. I mean, you know, Bikini Kill them, too. That's like, you got to play with some legends there, so that's exciting.
Yeah, that was cool.
Yeah.
After that, I played in this really intense, like, math rock band. It was, like, all changing time signatures. It was, like, a stoner time signature extravaganza with like 7-minute songs that were really three songs glued together.
Yeah.
And it was called Slot 'Em Go. And we had a whole rock opera that accompanied our crazy shows. And we did all kinds of crazy stuff. That band is pretty funny. There's a lot. We put out one record and then we recorded a second that we never finished. Oh. And it was supposed to be called Ever, as in Best Band Ever. But then we didn't finish it. So the drummer and I were considering releasing it just as instrumentals and calling it Never.
No.
But I don't know.
Man, I don't know. I feel like if you did all the work, you owe it to the fans.
I know. Yeah. I feel like that too. Because people love that band. People love that band. That band was crazy. We would do silly stuff like look up on the Billboard and see what is the top 10 songs of that week. And just like play a show, like figure out what the songs were on Monday and then play that show of that 10 songs on Friday.
That's funny.
People would come up to our show and expect this like math rock whatever thing. And we'd be playing like Avril Lavigne and Christina Aguilera. And they'd be like, what is going on?
That's hilarious though. It'd be even better if you did like math rock versions of Avril Lavigne.
Yeah,
like...
it would. We played them really true to the actual songs.
Which he was a skater funny. Boy, but in like right. 5 weeks.
Yeah, totally. Yep.
So from that point, like, how did you end up back here in Baltimore?
Well, I skipped a really important band that I was in for 17 years, which was
so
like
this is the biggest chunk.
So I played in this band called Dirty Excuse. We're still a band. Like, really, we could just call each other up and be like, hey, I got a date at this venue and we're going to play. Can you come like 2 hours before the show? So we could just like run through the set and then just play the show. Mm-hmm. And we'll still like, we'll do that. We won't play for 4 years, play a show and it'll be full and it's awesome. That's like really just straight up. It's a rock and roll band. It's awesome. It's an awesome band. I love that band.
And so was that based up there?
Yeah, that's based up there. Yeah. And that was with Erica Stoltz, who's now in a metal band called Sanhedrin that is coming to Metro Gallery next weekend.
Nice.
Alicia, and she was also in a band from San Francisco called Lost Goat. It was like a stoner band.
That's
from
a good name.
That. Yeah. And then Alicia Godsberg, who's in a band called Lionfish. She's been in a million bands. She's a ringer. She can play the crap out of any guitar. Mm-hmm. She's awesome. The best. And then our drummer, Gary, who plays in everybody's band. He's like the best. Best.
So 17-year run, that's pretty significant. So
yeah.
Like what would you say was keeping you guys going? Because there's not that many bands that hang around that long.
I think it was just, uh-oh, that's
so
my tiny child crying,
uh-oh,
screaming.
Do you need to, is everything all good?
Or? It sounds like Chelsea's managed it.
Okay.
What kept us going? I don't know, we just like hanging out together, really. Mm-hmm. We just like get in a room and be really loud. Just get in a room and be so loud.
Sometimes it's all you need.
Yeah, we practiced once a week, every week, at least once a week, if not more, every week for like 17 years. Just boom, 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 every week. It's just, I don't know, it's just like awesome. The time away from everything else and get in the room and just make loud sounds. And
did you put out a lot of records?
We put out only 2 full-length records.
Okay.
Yeah, we only put out 2 records. I'm sure we have a catalog of probably 2 more records worth of material, but we just never got around to recording it.
Well, that's interesting.
Yet,
yeah. That leaves you something to do.
yeah, totally. For sure.
So after doing that, is that when you came back here?
Yeah. Yeah. Our rent went up.
Oh, was it just like that simple? Like,
well, we had a kid.
Out.
Yeah, we got priced out. Like, we had a kid. We lived at the last train stop in Brooklyn. We lived on a 3-story walk up on the top floor. And, you know, just between the kid and the stroller and the subway stairs. And I don't want to sound like I'm whining, but the cost of living we weren't doing anything there that made the cost of living make sense.
Yeah.
Like, before, we would go to shows all the time, or we would go to cool museums, or we go to see our friends do a million different cool guys things, and or go out to eat at a restaurant. Like, I don't know, that all that kind of goes out the window once you have a kid and everything becomes, you're like, oh, we can't go to a restaurant anymore. I was just like working all the time. I never saw the baby, and I was just like paying rent and buying groceries, and that was it. I had no other income, so I was like, we gotta get out of here. As soon as our rent went up, I was like, yeah, we looked for like a week, and we were like, oh my god, we already have the cheapest apartment in the whole city. We gotta go. And Chelsea had never been here before, so she was like, well, where do you suppose we might go? And I was like, well, we can't live I have family, and she has family in D.C., and then my parents still live around Wilmington, Delaware, and then her dad's still in New York, so we wanted to stay on the Northeast Ridge, but we also were like, we can't afford almost any city on the Northeast Regional, so we're looking at Philadelphia and Baltimore, and at that time, Philadelphia didn't recognize our marriage. I was concerned that if something should happen to either of us, they potentially wouldn't recognize me as a parent of my kid. And I don't know. It was like a lot to think about. So I was like, let's look at Maryland was cool. So I was like, let's look at Baltimore. And Chelsea's like, cool, I've never been there. So we got an Airbnb.
That's so crazy that like, you know, those big political situations had such like a drastic impact on your life.
Oh, yeah, for sure. I was like, God forbid either one of us should end up in the hospital. I mean, my name is on everybody's name is on the birth certificate, but I don't know. You never know. You just never know what's going to happen. So I wanted to make sure we lived somewhere where that wasn't called into question, that recognized our marriage and recognized me as a parent of my kid.
Yeah. Well, thank goodness for that.
Yeah, thank goodness.
So, sorry, I didn't mean to cut you off. So you were Airbnb-ing it?
Oh, yeah. So we just got a Airbnb, like, in this neighborhood, in this lady's attic. It was really weird. It was super weird, but it was really cheap. And we rented a car. We came down here for a week, and Chelsea was like, all right, like, I guess this is what we're going to do. And I was like, we good? And then when we finally were leaving, we packed up all of our stuff. We drove away in a blizzard. It was January. We drove away in a blizzard. We packed up all of our stuff and we're driving over the outer bridge crossing, and Chelsea was driving. I looked over and she was like, a silent tear running down her cheek. I was like, oh my god, are you okay? She's like, I feel like I just broke out of prison.
So it was a happy tear.
Yeah, it was a happy tear. She's like, I can't believe this is actually happening. I never thought you would leave New York, because I never thought I would leave New York. I never thought I would. I would like be, you get like into this psychosis there where you're like, there's no other place I can live. Right. Like, this is it. It's the only place where I can be free to be myself. But it's like, at what cost?
Yeah.
I'm not free to be myself if all I do is work at a job I'm not happy at. And
like honestly, on your day to day, like, I mean, there's lots of cool stuff to do there and stuff, but on your day to day basis,
I'm not doing that. Yeah. I'm just rotting in the subway for 5,000 hours and like getting home and spending a gazillion dollars at Superfood Town on groceries with like mealworms in them. It's too much.
No,
it's too much.
Yeah. Now, had you lived in this? Had you lived in Baltimore before? Mm-mm. Or okay, so this was your first time too.
This is my first time living here.
So when you were after you moved here, is that when you started the Sarah FM project? Or
yeah, okay, yeah, because I needed to do something. I was like, I had been playing in groups for so long. I mean, we touched on like two bands I played in New York, but I played in like 100 bands in New York. I played, you know, in this band New Professionals. We went to Los Angeles and made a record for a month in the early 2000s. I played in Sit and Spin. I don't know. I just played in like 1,000,000,000 bands. I played in a band called West. That was a really awesome band. I just was always used to playing in groups, you know, and like collaborating with people. So I was kind of going crazy here. Like, I want to make music. I was like, forget it. I guess I'm just going to go ahead and do it. Just do it. Yeah.
So, had you already been doing like synth stuff before, or did you kind of like get into that in order to do this project?
Had you
been experimenting with like synth and things in your other bands?
Oh, yeah. I mean, I've always had like a little home studio, so I always was making beats for people or mixing people's stuff or, you know, writing like more soundtracky stuff, and all the stuff I was writing outside of my group was always more mellow. Mm-hmm. And when I was in Slut 'Em Go, they were always like rolling their eyes at me because I wanted to play more mellow, less math rock. And they were like, nah, I wanted to play more poppy, you know, whatever. We're stuff good. People could sing along to.
Yeah. It does have, the stuff you're doing now does have a, like a really interesting like kind of chill vibe. So is that kind of like a breath of fresh air for you then?
Yeah, I finally get to do that thing. Because I honestly, like when I moved to New York, the biggest records that were out was like Plantation Lullaby and Urban Hang Suite, and Brown Sugar just came out, and Faith Evans' first record, so good, Ready to Die came out. I don't know, it's just like that was the music that was perpetually surrounding me. Mary J. Blige, Share My World just came out. I don't know, that's the music I listen to. That's always been the music I listen to. If I sit down and I'm like, I'm going to listen to a record, I can guarantee you that right now it's going to be her. That's it. That's the only thing I'm going to listen to. I'll listen to this. I made a playlist on Spotify. It's just like every her song in a row, and I'll just put that on. I don't even have any other inclination to listen to different music.
Gotcha.
So it is definitely really... freeing to be able to finally just, I don't know, play what I'm hearing in my head and have all of the tools accessible to me to do it. Because it used to be I would have to go into a recording studio and pay a pile of money that I don't have.
Yeah, and your studio downstairs looks real legit. But do you ever kind of miss, like, playing music in a group?
Or, yes.
Okay.
Every day. I talked to Alicia, who was a guitar player in Dirty Excuse, and also we were in another band together that's called the Lesbo Spinal Tap, that's called Sweet Tits. That put out we put out a record. We actually got to record that record in the studio where Biggie made Ready to Die, so that was pretty awesome.
That's neat.
But yeah, I talk to her all the time about, we always just kvetch at each other about how we wish that we could still be playing in a group, because we've been playing music together for like 20 years. It's a drag. And also, we barely have to talk to each other to know what we want the other one to do.
Yeah. No, that's a pretty special relationship. Like, that's a long time. So hopefully you can make something happen there.
Yeah.
Thank you all.
Yeah, we always talk about it. So I'll just keep... And also, I have another friend who was, like, my very first friend when I moved to New York, LK, who sings on... Sun Don't Sing is the song on Fade Away, and then she also sings Don't Want to Talk on Volition.
Yeah.
Who I've been making the four track recordings with. It was like my first friend in the city, and we just sit in her bedroom like making these like sad acoustic songs on my four track. And we're always perpetually talking about doing a project. Like, I'm going to come down there one of these days, and we're just going to get in this, lock ourselves in the studio and, like, really do it. So, we'll see.
Yeah. Make it happen.
Yeah.
So, when you move down here, first, before I ask that, are you able to play out much? You did Women Fuck Shit Up, which is when I met you.
Yeah, that was super fun. That was the first show I had played in a year.
Okay. So it's kind of infrequent.
First show I had played down here in a year.
Yeah.
I have gone to New York and played with Dirty Excuse, I think, has played more recently than I have.
Wow. Well, because what I was getting at is I was just wondering if if you moved here, if you found opportunities to play out much.
No, I find way more opportunities to play out in New York because I'm a known quantity there.
Yeah.
I was in the scene for a million years. I was a live sound guy at a venue for a while. I'm way more plugged into the scene there.
And it's not that far.
And here I'm like somebody's random old mom. So I'm like, they're like, who are you and why should I care? And I'm like, but seriously, check out the record because I think you might like it. And then people listen to the record and like, oh, like, okay, I get it now. But, you know, I've also had to adapt to playing by myself, which is weird, you know.
Sure.
It's like awkward for me because I'm usually like able to like noodle around on the guitar and have like say funny things, and I have like a whole group that's backing me up or is contributing. We're all doing this thing together, and then now it's like, you know, really puts you on the spot to be just like by yourself.
Yeah, I've been in that situation. I tried to do like some solo stuff, and I don't know, I've just never really felt comfortable with it myself.
Yeah,
but more power to people that can do it. And you certainly pulled it off, though. Oh,
I don't know. I'm trying to figure it out. I'm still trying to figure it out. I've just been making either stemmed out tracks, and then, you know, depending on how much time I have, I'll bring a bigger rig and like play in Ableton and have potentially a group with me. But yeah, for that show, I made stereo mixes of all the songs on Fade Away and then a couple songs from Volition, and I just deleted the main guitar track and deleted the vocals and just played along. Yeah. Played my, you know, my guitar, the lead guitar part, and sang it.
No, that works. So you brought up Parenthood, and you know, I when we set this up, I definitely wanted to ask you about how that's affected your music, if it has. Like, obviously your time is more focused, but like content wise the things you're writing about, the sounds you're making, have you noticed any change with that?
You know what, I don't know if it's me changing as much as I just try and make my kids adapt to whatever I'm making. Like they're cool, they'll kind of listen to whatever, and I sort of am just trying to use my musical taste to influence theirs. But you know, my big one only wants to listen to Kids Bop, which is really harsh. It's a really tough. I'm like, you know, there's a grown-up version of that song that's way better. She's like, no, I like the Kids Bop version better.
I wonder if that's a version of punk rock because it's a kid singing, so they're like, oh, I can do that.
Yeah. something. I don't know what it is. It's like, oh, it's just so soulless and whatever. If it appeals to her, it's fine. It has a soul, I suppose.
Yeah.
I didn't mean to say my child has a soul. She does. Both of them do. But Ruby's still in the small one is still in the mode where I can kind of put on all she wants to listen to all day, every day. Her number one only request is Snow in April, the Michelle and Indigicello version. It is so sad. And she loves sad music, and she's like, Mama, play the Tracy Died song, play the Tracy Died song. I'm like, and I'm here for it, because I could listen to that song on repeat until I was dead, so it's fine.
Well, I guess she'll have to.
And I will, like, yeah.
That's funny. I wonder why she connects with that.
I don't know. She likes like, sad songs with heavy content. Which
introspective, maybe.
Yeah, maybe. Yeah, I'm into it. I like that. I'm similar, so that's good.
That's funny. Do you think being a parent has like changed the lyrical things that you do? You find yourself writing about different things?
Yeah. There goes one. Yeah. The big one. I probably just monitor my use of potty words.
Oh, gotcha. Yeah. I didn't even think about it from that angle, but that makes sense.
Yeah, I mean, I really do, because it wouldn't even occur to me to just be saying the F word all over a bunch of songs before, but now I totally don't do that at all. And, you know, probably they've trained it out of me. But yeah, I think feel like I want to write songs that they can listen to and sing along to, and if I hear them singing my song, I don't want to be like, ooh, they probably shouldn't be saying that. I mean, I want them to be able to enjoy my record too. So, yeah.
Yeah,
it's so cool. They'll listen to it, and I had like 10 songs I was picking through for the EP, and like Billy could sing you all the guitar parts because she's heard them so much, and she helped me like narrow it down to the ones I was gonna actually ultimately use.
So that's your editor.
Yeah, I have a 6-year-old editor, so that's cool.
That's perfect. Now, we talked a little bit about you starting to work on your own, but I did notice that you do collaborate. You mentioned LK Naps, and then on Volition, you were working with Josh Stokes, is that right? So is there, so you are able to work with others?
Yeah, totally. I have an upcoming single that's going to come out with a secret surprise guest. Okay. While I have everybody's attention with this EP, I want to put out, I recorded a track and left the verses blank, and I got a really awesome rapper to fill the verses, so we're gonna put that out probably next month.
Oh, next month. Okay, yeah. Sweet. Yeah. By the time this comes out, that might be up then.
Oh, cool.
So what should people just like follow you on Bandcamp to see that?
Yeah, or? People can follow me on Bandcamp. I'm on Spotify. Follow me on Spotify. Please follow me on Spotify. Leave a nice review at iTunes. It really does make a difference. Spotify is crazy because you get like hundreds of thousands of plays and you streams and you get like $300. Mm. Bandcamp obviously is like way better for artists. Even iTunes, like when people purchase music directly, then you get paid. It's just such a drag how the model has shifted to this, like, yeah. You've got to give it away. Mm-hmm. It's a bummer.
Yeah, yeah. Have you been thinking of ways to kind of like deal with that? Or I guess, how have you been dealing with that?
I've just been really trying to guilt people into going to Bandcamp. Like, the album's only $5. Sometimes just like get it from Bandcamp or go to iTunes. It's like $4.98 on iTunes. So I've been like, come on. It's like if you look, forego coffee. Fancy coffee out for 2 days and you're good. Or not even, if it's like a single coffee, if you're going to get a fancy coffee.
Yeah. Yeah. I never thought about it like that, but yeah.
Yeah.
Just start bullying people that way.
Yeah, you got to bully people into it. I mean, you know, because I know, I can see how many people are streaming it on Spotify. I know, like, lots of people are listening to it. People are enjoying it, whatever. I'm just like, just spend the $5.
I know. It's tough.
Yeah,
it's
it
tough.
Is.
But you also do like radio work, don't you? You were saying you make little spots.
Yeah, sometimes I'll do like little interstitials or something like that, or soundtrack stuff. I have a really great person I work with in New York, who Bernadette, who's been getting me some soundtrack work for independent films and stuff. So that's been really cool.
That's neat.
Yeah.
Do you find that? How do you approach that? I mean, obviously, if you're doing a soundtrack, there's certain things that they're looking for.
Yeah.
Do you feel different about that creatively than you do about your own stuff?
I have to be able to let go of the music. So that's something new. You know, you could write something that you like, or if you write something that's good enough to go be used for another purpose, and then... I don't know. I've been really, really lucky to work with this person who's been like a mentor to me, who usually hooks me up with like, she's a music supervisor, so she'll hook me up with the stuff. And she's like, I am licensing your music. I am not, you are never giving away your rights if you're working with me.
That's good. That's the way to do it.
Yeah. So that's cool. But yeah, there are times where I have to like, relinquish either the mix or the piece itself or whatever it is. So, you know, just changing your mindset to being like, I don't know, it's like a greedy like loyalty to your own music or whatever it is. You don't just like give it away. I mean, you're not giving it away, obviously, you're getting paid, but it's, yeah. You have to like think of it like that. And, you know, I'm not a super...
So you kind of have the sense that this isn't yours anymore. Is that kind of what you're saying?
Yeah. Yeah, you have to have, like, some kind of detachment. But it's good when they come at you and they're like, we need an up-tempo hip-hop with a bass-heavy beat, but that also sounds like breaking news. Like, okay. Like, I could do that.
Specific.
I gotcha.
Let me get on.
Yeah.
And so, is that kind of, like, your quote-unquote day job, or, like...
I have a lot of day jobs.
Yeah.
I do a lot of different things. I do like general contracting, whatever.
Oh, okay.
Else. I do lots of day jobs. We're just cobbling it together over here at the Michael's household.
Gotcha. So the other thing I wanted to ask about, and I'm kind of jumping around, I'm looking at some notes I took, so that's kind of why.
Sorry.
So getting back to the fadeaway record, I kind of noticed there's sort of like an intimacy to it. There's like, I noticed some night imagery, some like things like that. And I was just wondering, was that something you intended, or is that just something I'm picking up? And like, did that come from doing it all as your own project perhaps? Or
Yeah, one of the songs, the lyrics were actually written by my beloved wife, and she brought them to me, and I was like, oh, this is kind of dirty. And she was like, no, it's not. It's about a pear ripening. And I'm like, no, it's not. I mean, and so then
that's
advice. Yeah. So then I sang it, and I put it to that slower, like kind of, I don't know, moody song. And I was like, what do you think this song's about now? And she's like, oh, I see what you're saying.
So she thought she was sending you like a nice little kid song about a pear.
She's like, advice, just like wait for the pear to ripen before you eat it. You don't want to eat a, oops, you don't, this is my phone. You don't want to eat a hard pear, like flavorless pear. And I'm like, okay. How about if it goes like this? And she was like, oh, okay. That's exactly how I pictured it.
is she a musician too?
Or? She's not. Okay. She's a poet and a fiction writer.
Oh, so that's perfect. Has she provided lyrics before?
She has not.
Oh, wow.
I was in a real desperate scramble for lyrics because I had all the music and I'm like, I can't mix this music anymore. I'm like done mixing this music. I have got to sing these songs and put some vocals on these songs. And I need some help with some lyrics. And I wrote three of them. And then LK wrote the lyrics to her song. And Chelsea wrote that last one. But yeah, she basically handed me a handful of like her throwaway poetry. And she was like, I'm not going to use these. And just like handed me a stack of stuff. And I'm like, some of them I can't sing. I can't figure out a way to work them into lyrics. But that one was so sparse. So it was easy to, in a kind of big, wide open, sparsey kind of song, to plug the, make them work in a song format. But I always perpetually ask her to help me write stuff. But she's like really thoughtful and considers every single word so much that she is not able.
Okay, sorry about the listener. The battery died. Oh, I'm very unprofessional. I'm sorry. So, Sarah, you were saying your wife Chelsea is very thoughtful about lyrics, considers every word.
Just about writing.
Poems.
Yeah.
So was that kind of like too slow to work together?
I needed to knock this record out. I wanted to really get it out and up on all the platforms before the Women Fuck Shit Up Fest. So it wasn't going to be timely. So I'm like, give me your garbage poems. I'll make it work. But I use one.
It really works for that song though. And probably the sparseness, helps in some ways, just like, I don't know. It works.
Yeah. The song that is on the record right before that also is in a movie, and the lyrics for that are kind of motivated by the drive of the movie. It's like kind of an intimate movie about these two people that are sort of following each other, like crossing paths and following each other around, being in the same spaces all the time, but they like obviously know each other's there, but never directly communicate to one another.
Ships in the night.
Ships in the night type thing. Yeah. So that was kind of, the lyrics were kind of just riffing on the, that movie's theme.
Gotcha. Well, I guess we should probably wind things down and I'll let you go. But, I always finish with the same question, everybody. What advice would you have for someone that's like getting started in music now?
Oh God. Mm-hmm. That's me. I'm buzzing.
That's okay.
Oh no, actually it's not. What advice would I have for somebody who's getting started in music now? Oh God. I don't know. I don't understand what is going on anymore. Obviously. Right. Like clearly I'm just sitting here like just putting out records and hoping for the best. And I don't know. I would say like try and learn an instrument that's made out of wood. That's something that I think is gives you more of it makes all this electronic stuff more accessible, I think. Mm-hmm. Like if you just have that suffering through that wooden instrument. And it, I don't know. And also, I don't know. What else?
It's a good bass to have, like a real instrument, for sure.
Yeah, just like if you can get your hands on literally anything, like you go Goodwill and find like a busted up guitar or like a drum or whatever.
Gotta get that high-action piano. Guitar. The high-action guitar. It's a rite of passage.
Yeah, the high-action guitar is always in the trash somewhere. You don't. It's not like I'm saying go out and purchase some expensive guitar. Like, you could do it with whatever. Get a recorder, you know? Yeah. Like, the... They'll give them out in or have them in elementary school music class. Just something that, like, makes you have to do the motions of making the music. Because I think that, like, I don't know, I bang on a lot of pads making stuff for people, and it's awesome. I can't believe, like, how accessible music is now. But I think that I'm old, and you had to suffer for art. Now you must suffer and play this impossible guitar.
Back in my day, our fingers had calluses.
Let me tell you something.
Yeah, that's good advice, though. Well, the album's great, and I hope people check it out and stream it a million times. And thanks so much for your time.
Thank you so much. This has been fun.
It was so great talking to Sarah. Be sure to check out Fade Away on her Bandcamp. As a side note, Bandcamp, if you don't know, from an artist perspective, Bandcamp is usually the best way to get digital music. The artists end up getting more of a cut out of it usually. So just a little side note there. All the bands we're talking about, most of them have something up on Bandcamp, and that's a good way to support them. But anyway, like I said, talking to Sarah was great. Her kids are adorable. It was nice to say hi to them. Just some quick Santa Labrada notes to let you know what we're up to. We're going to be playing the Montgomery County Pride Party, which is June 29th. It looks like it's going to be in Rockville. To be honest, there's a lot going on. The best way would be to go online and check out their event page to catch all the details. But I'm super looking forward to it. I have an outfit picked out, and I hope you all are ready for some Pride partying as well. Now, after that, on July 3rd, we're going to be playing a local show with Plurals, Joseph and the Beast, and Holy Fingers. Now, those have all been guests on the show, so if you haven't heard those episodes, please check out the back catalog, because they're all great bands. I'm so looking forward to playing with them July 3rd at the Auto Bar. That's right before 4th of July. You can come check out the show and get amped up to enjoy your 4th of July festivities. So thanks so much for spending time with me today. As always, you can reach me at corridorcast@gmail.com. Twitter, you can get at me on Kelsey on Guitar, KelsiOnGuitar. And as always, make sure you subscribe on your favorite podcasting app. And make sure you subscribe to the right Corridor Cast. There's another one that started up after mine. So just look for the C logo. It's like orangey. It looks like a typewriter key. As always, send me your band suggestions. I love listening to new stuff. We always need to get new bands on here to celebrate what Baltimore and DC are up to. I'll give you a little preview. The next episode is going to be with Homunculus, and it's a tongue twister for me. I don't know why, but they're a really great heavy band that I really love. It's kind of like metal-y, screamy, and they were also really fun to talk to, really good people. So make sure you subscribe so you don't miss that one. All right, thanks again, and have a great day.